Okay, good evening. Welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett and I'm net control for today, July 28th, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 MHz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by, allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness. We'll talk about COVID-19 updates. There are just a few of those. And you just have me tonight. We also can talk about some other topics. I think we might want to review again a little bit about use of the radio in during emergencies. Nate brought that up today. There was a lot of crickets on board in terms of what people think you should do if, you know, there's an emergency and, you know, how you use the radio. There's lots of other topics that are available tonight, but we'll discuss what you like. Let me just move on here. Anyway, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in the emergency preparedness discussions. We'll start by checking in the stations that would like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussion. If you have a particular question in advance, you let me know. I can mark you in. New people are welcome. And, I want to start first with those people who might be listening in on Echolink. Echolink check-ins now for the emergency preparedness net. Okay, not hearing anybody on Echolink tonight. Okay, let's again check in with that call sign slowly and phonetically. Be kind to my ears. I'll see your name. Come now for general check-in.
Hello, Brent. This is W7 November Alpha Tango, Nate, and Kilo Echo 7 Delta Romeo Yankee, Joanne.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem.
Good evening. This is Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Okay, let's pause there for a second. That was Art, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta. Nate, Whiskey 7, November Alpha Tango. And Nate, can you come back again with Joette's call because I mistyped it and now I can't find it.
Okay, it is Kilo Echo 7, Delta Romeo Yankee.
Okay, thank you. That was, again, Kilo Echo 7, Delta Romeo Yankee, Joette. Keeping dry on a day like today, I guess. That's what it looks like to my eyes. Very good. Okay, anybody else for the emergency preparedness net? Come now.
Good evening, Brett and the group. This is Jerry in Silverton, Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo.
Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima Uniform, Paul, 7 miles north of Beaverton.
Whiskey 7, Charlie Mike, Bruce Dundee.
Okay, there's a pause in the action. That was Bruce, Whiskey 7, Charlie Mike. Bruce there. Welcome. Paul was in there. Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima Uniform. Paul's our EC of the Air Reach Group from Marion County. I think operating in a different station up in Portland, I think. Jerry was in there. Whiskey Alpha 7, Hotel Sierra Bravo. Jerry's been helping us out a lot on our emergency mesh network. We can always talk about that stuff, too. Anybody else?
Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel and Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Alan and Jennifer, Salem.
Okay, and there's Alan and Jennifer, Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel and Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Papa. Welcome to the net again tonight. 706, Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. This is the emergency preparedness net. Anybody else? Okay, it seems like we have a pause here. Let's see if there's any announcements for the net. Anybody have any announcements? Okay, not a very active group there. Nate, are you going to send out an announcement for the upcoming? Are we going to decide? Did we decide on the CTR club? Are you sending out something on upcoming meeting for that?
Yes, I have it ready, and I'm going to send it out tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so anyway, look for an email from Nate if you're in the CTR club. Mailing list talking about next month's meeting. Typically in August we've had a social meeting to help support the group and the repeaters that are sponsored by the group with ice cream, and I think there might be there's a way to do that outdoors and safely, so I think that is the plan. So it won't be a radio or net next. The first Tuesday of the month is when we normally meet. Let's see, Paul, did you, KE7OLU, do you have any announcements as far as the Aries? Are we going to, what's up with the next meeting?
KE7OLU, yes, the Marion County OSCOM Aries will meet on Monday, the 3rd of August, 7 o'clock. It'll be a Zoom meeting, and I'll send out to all of the people on the mailing list announcement probably Saturday, KE7OLU.
Okay, once again, yeah, any other announcements? So that was, again, regarding the Marion County OXCOM Aries group. We've been doing Zoom meetings, and that does seem to work, although I don't think we have as many people as we probably would like, that we would have in a normal face-to-face meeting, but face-to-face meetings aren't going to happen right now. So, again, we do need ways to, even sort of emergency preparedness-wise, we still need to be prepared and be able to operate and work together to solve, problems. So, little problems have come up, you think about, obviously we have some big problems as well, right now, but we still need to be able to operate, we still need to be able to provide communications and situational awareness, and, that can be done over radio, and we still need to practice our skills, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that tonight, again, because we have a lot of misinformation, which spreads very, very quickly and easily. And I think the best thing that we can do is, we'll talk about this in a bit here, is maybe get some ideas about how to keep information, how do we find reliable information, within our community that's useful to us without giving into misinformation. And, we can talk a little bit about, their motives for disinformation, but you know, it's not a new thing. It's just much easier and faster to do it these days than it is any other time in history. And so, you know, anything that happens, you know, that's the one of the things that, you know, we have to be able to sort out the, you know, the facts from the fiction or the rumors or I heard this or somebody told me that kind of thing. And we need to address that because we can't function if we don't have, good situational awareness. It's just a principle of emergency operations. Okay, anyway, so lots of stuff going on. We'll just talk a little bit about COVID here at the beginning. There's not a lot of, new scientific information. We can talk a little bit about, there are vaccine trials that are taking place. That was sort of the big news that going into clinical trials where we try to find out whether the treatments we have are effective and safe. And those big phase 3 clinical trials are coming up. This is probably the most rapid development of any vaccine in history. So we need to, do our diligence and find out what happens with this. We can't sort of wish that one's going to work and, we're sort of firing off all different kinds of ideas here, and we're going to find out which ones work and which ones don't, and hopefully get the answer settled before too long. But that's there wasn't a lot of scientific news. There's a lot of, social media news and political news and things like that, which I don't really like to talk too much about, except in to tell you that it is a problem to spread disinformation. It is just a chronic problem, and we have to be more and more wary of it. So in light of that, also, I want to talk a little bit about, computer security as well, because there have been, because people are working at home, the Internet itself is more vulnerable than it has been. There are people who are aggressively attacking with ransomware. If anyone doesn't know what ransomware is, we can go over that. But ransomware is a type of, computer code that is usually injected into a system by tricking people, called spear phishing. You trick people by pretending to be someone you're not and delivering information that, they think they want to hear. Like if you your boss could say to you, you guys need to review this this document for, next Monday's meeting. If they could find out that your boss's name and email and when the next Monday's meeting is, more than likely you're going to open it. And in doing so, you might inject this malware code. So does anybody not know what ransomware is? Okay, so anyway, the point of this is even the biggest companies, too, we just had, Garmin went down this week. Garmin is a big multinational company. All their servers went down last week on about Thursday, and because they had a ransomware attack. And they're not real. We can talk about whether you should really be publicizing that or not. But the point is, it happened, and they had to do something about it, and it cost them a lot of money, either in computer support or I don't know if they paid the ransom or not. But most companies are deciding it's cheaper to pay the ransom than to actually, to hire computer consultants to try to break the code. It's interesting. It's a it's a whole new threat that we haven't really thought of. But yes, you can break the Internet, and you can break servers that you need by putting malware in them, and that is a threat. That's another. Just like any other sort of all hazard, it is a hazard to us.
W7ABU.
Welcome, Dan. Yeah, go ahead. That's W7ABU. Got you checked in.
I hope this is leading to some really good, helpful advice on not getting yourself involved in ransomware. I received a message from what looked like a fake Microsoft account, and it turned out to be real. So I don't know how in the world you're supposed to tell this stuff apart sometimes. This was really a message from Microsoft. It was concerning one of the cloud services, and I did actually leave my name and email with them, and then found out, no, I didn't want to pay for it. Well, they took that information anyway and made it look like my account was expiring, and that's why I knew there was something going on there. And they started quoting so many things that I realized, yep, they're real. And then I looked at the address it was from. It was from a Microsoft address that they typically use. So it was legit, but it was, no, I'm not interested type thing. I believe that was just a delete, WA7ABU.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Well, this is the thing. So, you know, what we're finding is that they are, fortunately, they seem to be going after with malware big companies that they think can pay. It's almost a business model. It's sort of like, you know, okay, you haven't secured your business well enough against malware, so we're going to force you into paying us to remove it, you know. My understanding is the malware people that do ransomware really do actually unlock your computer once you pay the ransom. It's not they're not just trying to take your money away. They are, which they are, but they're not leaving your computer. They are fixing it. It's sort of ethical piracy here, right? So, you know, this form of ransomware that we're experiencing is. The only way you can really defeat it is to have backups of your critical data. What it does is if you're not aware of what happens is that the malware writes a little script in the background that just quietly encrypts all of your files. So encryption normally is something we sort of like on our computers because that means our data is safe and people can't read them. But you, the user, you can choose to do that encryption, but then you need to have a key to unlock it. Now, somebody does that and generates a really, really powerful key and encrypts your files without your knowledge, what happens is everything that you have created, all of your data, you know, is that's what they encrypt. Actually, don't do anything to the programs that you use because they want you to continue to create things. So after a while, after all of your files are encrypted, then you get a little notice that pops up and says, pay us money, you know, or Bitcoin or whatever, and we'll send you the key to unlock your files. Otherwise, you're screwed. Any questions or comments on that? So anyway, the important thing to realize is that these, what they're called spear phishing attacks, do have a social component to them. And you have to, you know, first of all, you know, having good passwords, really important, but also kind of knowing, you know, who is sending information is helpful. And even if it is your, you know, let's say it is your boss that's sending you a piece of, you know, information, supposedly an attachment, you know, that if you weren't expecting it, you know, you can always say, don't open it, you know, you can always say, hey, I got something from you, did you send this? And these days people should, the answer should be, yes, I did send it, you know, and make sure that you send it to the email that you think, not to, remember, it can look like an email, it can just change like one character, or they can use even a fake email that looks like a real email. When you hover over it, you might find it's actually an alias for some long email in God knows where. But the point is that if you go ask or call or fact check the piece of information that's being sent to you, that's the best way. You know, especially if you're working on a mission critical kind of a big VPN kind of system, that's virtual private network. So protect yourself against opening anything. So an invoice or something like that. Your invoice is attached, you know. Don't open the invoice unless you know somebody that the person is sending it and you're expecting that invoice. Because when you click on it and open it, that's when it ejects the malware. Okay, any other... So anyway, we have malware happening. We have, that's a threat, again, that we have, then we can talk more about that. We have misinformation appearing in the media. We have some facts from the on the numbers of cases in Oregon. And I think last week I told you guys to look at the trends here in our current situation in Oregon and see what you think is happening here. So we look at, you know, disease burden under the Oregon Health Authority here. Take a look at disease burden. So one of the things that we worry about is hospitalizations. And it looks like the hospitalization trend, you know, it might be going back and forth. That's sort of good. But there's still more hospitalizations now than there were back in June, okay? It kind of peaked out there around July, you know, the first couple weeks in July. It seems like it's just sort of going up and down, but it's a little hard to tell, okay? It's better, you know, but that ultimately affects us. Because what we want is, you know, we want to be able to have a, you know, hospital with capacity to take care of other things besides COVID. So we don't want our hospitals filled with COVID people. We want to see a trend, you know, they say we want to see the hospitalization trend go down over 14 days without any uptrend in the past week. So that is the factor they're looking for. And also the numbers of hospitalizations in the past 28 days. So we are seeing that those numbers, still a lot of counties have greater than 5 hospitalizations per day in the past 28 days, including Marion County. Okay, so ER visits, again, they're actually lower than they went up, and, you know, they're, we're still trending below the you know, that's an okay thing. Percentage of positive cases seems to be this last couple of weeks has actually gone down a little bit, but new COVID cases are still trending upward. You sort of look at these trend lines. The one that's the most concerning, if you look at, is, you know, the percentage of COVID cases not traced to a known source. So I think, you know, most of you guys have been on here long enough to talk about, you know, the approaches to these things. We'd like to be able to say, oh, well, okay, you have COVID. Let's find out who you've been around. And, oh, yeah, there you go. You got it from, you know, Joe in the meatpacking plant there, and good, we've checked everybody out, and we've told them all to quarantine. Now, the new rule is you need to quarantine for 10 days, not 14. So 10 days, and then supposedly we don't really even need a negative test after that, so you're no symptoms. That at least is the guideline. But, you know, the idea would be to identify those people, trace them, and tell them to quarantine. Okay, so anyway, but the percentage they'd like us to have is the percentage of cases not traced to a known source would be less than 30% of the cases. Well, unfortunately, our new cases with and without a known source, that number of unknown cases is going up, and you can look at a lovely trend line. It is going up and up and up. So we seem to be kind of losing the battle. Says 88 on July 21st, which was the last piece of data on here, were traced to a known source out of 294. But back on June 1st, we had only 14 cases without a known source. So that number is going up.
That'll be 7 and 18.
Yes, Nate, go ahead.
And then you've got those telephone calls that keep coming in all the time that I call bad calls. And you call them back just to see, are they real or not? And it says, this number is not available.
Are you talking about the telephone calls that are pretending to be COVID tracers?
No, not necessarily COVID, anything. Maybe they're pretending to be Social Security or something.
Yeah, correct. You know, that's always been a problem. But it is, again, you sort of think, this is people are, that do these malicious things to us are very clever. You know, you have to give them that. So, you know, they're taking advantage of the fact that, okay, if you got a call that said, or a text message that said, hey, you know, you're possibly have been contacted, in contact with someone who had COVID, you would definitely look at that and you know, probably take it seriously. But if they, you know, they will call you, that's my understanding. They will send you a letter. They will not necessarily text you or email you if you ever get anything like that. It says, hey, you know, send us your Social Security number so we can verify, again, your birthday so we can verify your records. So that, they don't do that. So, again, always fact-check this stuff. It is really important to you know, not give out information that, you know, it's fine to say, well, give me a number to call you back and call back the health department and say, you know, if they really wanted to check with you, they would have your case on file. But don't take cold calls that don't, you know your information ahead of time. You know, I think they would be, this is just another one of those things that's just being defensive about your information in the face of these frauds.
One more, W7NAT.
Yes, Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, today we got a call on the phone. It said, the last time you talked to us, your timeshare, well, we've never had a timeshare, and we hadn't talked to him before. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, so does anybody have any other comments about, you know, this, I mean, this trend of, I mean, it seems like we just can't get away from the attempts at fraud. Does anybody have any other comments or questions or tips to help us, so, you know, prepare for that?
W7ABU.
Yeah, Dan, go ahead, please.
Here's some quick tips. Did they call you by your name? If they just said something to the effect of, dear account holder, that's not good enough. That you might as well hang up right then. You got to ask yourself, is this something they would do over the phone normally? Would PayPal call you on the phone? Would the sheriff call you on the phone saying that we are going to arrest you if you don't do such and such and go buy some things down at the store and send it to a certain place? That, you know, that's not something that they would call you about. They might show up at your door, but they won't show up on the phone and warn you about an arrest. Similar things. You got to ask yourself, is this something that a company of this type would be calling you about? That's two hints that I can give you, WA7ABU.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so, again, those are, pretty good, just general tips for anyone, really. You have to be careful, though, because, again, they can be sometimes very, very clever if they get the name of a friend or something. And I know that that happened with some email things that I think we had something saying, well, you know, so-and-so, well, they're, you know, they're we've been contacted by them, and he gave me your name, and they need you to wire them some money so they can get out of jail or something like that. Well, it might be somebody, you know, the name that they know is from your address book or something. Yeah, you know, so you think that's the case, but it's definitely, you know, out of the ordinary, and you're never really going to get a legitimate thing like that. Other people, again, with the unemployment things and the benefits thing that's been happening, have called up and said, "Oh, will you? We're your benefits counselor, and you need to give us your information so you can get your benefit." Well, again, that doesn't work that way. So again, they're trying to get your bank account information, things like that. So I just have an answering machine. Legitimate thing, I will listen to the answering machine, and most of the time they just hang up. Okay, so anyway, I wanted to, again, bring up, we've talked a little bit again about this disinformation and misinformation, and again, I want to get back to sort of who can you trust and what should we do? Because look, anytime you have some chaos and some doubt, you know, then people take advantage of it. And part of what we have is that if you don't have all of the facts, or that there's doubt about something, then you can create a myth that might be, that you just have to really have to research to figure out. And I think we talked about the one last time about, I spent a lot of time looking up the answer to some medical claim. But the point is that you have to. We don't really actually have a very good way of doing this individually. To sort of decide, are you going to have an FDA and they're going to approve the drugs like they've done all along? Why would we, if we're going to trust them to approve the drugs all along, why would we not trust them to approve whatever drug that, we're considering for as a treatment? So we have to get, we have to have some sort of authority that we believe in enough to hear what they say. But these things are happening at a pace that is outstripping our normal time that we take to gather information. So it takes a long time to approve drugs normally. You realize that, right? I mean, it takes years to approve things. Sometimes our FDA never approves something, and it might be a legitimate treatment in another country. So it's very interesting that we try to, all of a sudden, boom, we're going to approve something. And I'd be, everybody's working on it. If we're sharing the information and it's true and there's enough evidence, then somebody has to decide whether we're going to take a step. But there's disinformation out there. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net. Let's see if anybody else wants to check in or has any new topics or comments or come now. Okay, so anyway, again, sort of looking at what harm is there in misinformation, the fact that something is popular also, I think we've discussed this before, the fact that everybody's talking about something doesn't mean that it's true, okay? And a lot of big news headline today about big, some video conference by doctors saying that there's supposedly talking about misinformation in light of the, COVID-19, except that if you read it further, it actually is promoting the use of this hydroxychloroquine as a drug and saying that we have, ignored this wonderful drug. No, we have not ignored the wonderful drug. This is a drug. And we've gone over this before. It does not have enough evidence to prove that it is useful or helpful against COVID-19, and it has harmful side effects. And there's lots of reasons why you don't want to just pick a drug and go, let's use it. You know, it creates shortages of the drug for people that actually need it. It creates a sense of false hope in people when this is just isn't the way it works. You know, so this one has been kind of beaten to death, yet it still continues to get our attention. And it just is it's a sad state of affairs that we have to keep worrying about this thing. We need to worry about the next drug, okay? Let's leave this one aside. It's just my, as a, you know, pharmacology PhD person, I can tell you that it's time to move on, okay? It's not medical advice. I'm just telling you it's just not sound scientific evidence right now to support it. And we need to move on to some other choices. Okay, so anyway, there are lots of reasons why you don't want to take medicines that are not proven or safe or whatever. I think I'm kind of preaching to the choir here because most everyone has been on here before. I wanted to mention also that you do need to, again, I think we've given you enough information about what is safe and what behaviors are safe versus, you know, what an individual business might have in place, okay? I'm going to give you an example today. I won't give the name of the clinic, but I had to go in for a blood test today. And I'll tell you something that maybe just get some ideas of what happened when we can just go in and get the blood test. So, routine blood test. Let me get a drip. Okay, so, you know, I was told to get there first thing in the morning because that's the best time. In fact, I said, I don't want to be around any sick people. And I said, okay, that's fine. The sick people are going to the urgent care center, so you won't even get, you know, go anywhere near them. You'll just come directly in, and we'll, you know, they have a screening process. So let's talk about the screening process that, you know, others can share their information. I'll just tell you what I did. I came out wearing my mask. I met at a desk by a woman at the beginning of the clinic, and she asked me some questions. And she said, have you been around anyone with COVID? Do you have COVID? Have you tested positive for COVID? And she also asked me about if I had any foreign travel. Do I have any symptoms of fever or you know, cough or something? And then she said, you know, did a quick forehead thermometer check of me after I said no to all those things. And then I said I just needed to get blood tests, and she sent me on back. So that's all well and good. Does anybody have any comment about that first step there? Okay, so anyway, the point is that actually I think we talked about this. Dr. Sun mentioned that the temperature screening thing doesn't catch it. You know, people can be asymptomatic. Okay, and that's nice to ask questions, but if I knew that I had COVID, I probably would not walk in the door that way. You know, we'd have a different approach. I would not be wandering in the door. So likelihood that if I had symptoms, I would not be there, you know. If I knew that I had a problem, I, you know, wouldn't need her to tell me to not go to the place. So I guess that's a little bit of theater there in terms of being prepared. She was wearing a mask and then went back and, you know, we checked in. And then I found out that there wasn't very many people at all in the building, just the employees there. Nobody in a big waiting room in the Gidrip. Okay, so I was told then I needed, after, you know, standing there for a while, they said, well, you're going to go back to a separate waiting room so you can have your blood drawn. It'll be a lab waiting area. And so I go back to a lab waiting area, and it's a room that's about 16 feet by 16 feet, and it looks like it has about 5 people in there. Now, they're wearing masks, but they're just, it's a small room. There's no windows. It's just a room. What do you think I did?
You left.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you left.
Well, I didn't leave because I needed to get the blood test, but I didn't go in that room. Why would I go in the room? Okay, I mean, that is what we're talking about. The point, we're all wearing our masks. Yes, that helps a little bit. These people in the room are trying to sit apart from each other. That was good, but it was a little room, and there were a fair number of people in it, and I would have been number six in the room. And I actually don't know if they have an actual published guideline of what the threshold number of people are in the room. But it turns out that, you know, and I finally sat out in the hallway, and the woman said, well, what are you doing in the hallway? And I said, I'm waiting for my lab. And she said, well, that's the waiting room. And I said, there's too many people in there right now. I don't want to go in there. So she said, well, okay. So they had a chair in the hallway. So I sat in the hallway where I could actually feel the air movement. I felt a little safer there. Later, another guy joined me. He sat about 6 feet away in another chair in the hallway. He also didn't go into that room. So the point was I wanted to get, you know, in and out of there as quick as I could, but you don't have to put yourself at risk. You know, she couldn't, I mean, I wasn't being belligerent. I was being careful. And it was all nicely set up, and it would have been fine if there had been one other person in the room, you know, for the amount of time I was there. But I was there for a total of about 20 minutes in that building, and I really didn't think I should be in a room with a bunch of people, you know, even if they're wearing masks in a small room with no windows. So any comments on that? I hope that you can advocate for yourself that even though that this is a doctor's clinic, not the doctor's clinic, but a clinic, you know, run by doctors and, you know, has staff and has protocols and procedures and everybody's masked up, you know, and they probably clean things and things like that, that, you know, we have told you before that you, when you are physically distant from people and not in small spaces, that's the safest way to be. And to go into a small space with a bunch of people you don't know, even wearing masks, is more risky. You know, so that's, it's just, I guess I just want you to make sure that don't be complacent about somebody, you know, has something set up that seems like it's organized. Just use your own sense. You have to decide what's safe for you. Any other comments about, I don't know, but they also have gone to, you know, into this kind of situation, the doctor or whatever. Dan mentioned to me that his doctor had, like, nobody there at all, and that was great. I probably could have done some more research and found out, you know, called in advance and said, hey, well, how's the crowd right now? The woman said, yeah, there was, like, 18 people here already since 7:30 this morning. Great. not the best time to go, right? Okay, well, anyway, we've talked a lot about that, but you have to, you know, again, we try to give you guys tools to, you know, to keep yourself safe, and I think all of you are doing a really good job of doing that. Boy, they keep challenging us here, don't they? There's everything from news stories that challenge our thinking to, you know, situations where, you know, you think you're safe and maybe you're not. So, at any rate, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net. We can move on to other topics. There are other topics to be had. You know, we have a heat wave happening right now. People are taking care of themselves with the heat wave and are aware of problems that heat causes with both our bodies and our equipment. Are there any comments about anything, measures that you've taken to, you know, beat the heat? Out there. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, and this is the emergency preparedness app. I'm doing a lot of talking. So I do like people to share their ideas and experiences so we can learn from each other. And if you have ideas of things that you, and other things you want to talk about, again, we will bring Dr. Sun back in when we have some updates on the scientific stuff that need to be explained. If we can, you know, if we decide that this is the vaccine we're going to use, I expect that we will talk all about vaccines and how the one that we've decided to use works, and you know what is known about them and things like that. It is, you know, normally a long. I just want to say one more thing about medicine: is a slow moving, and you know, normally a slow moving process to approve new medications, and it's a slow process to prove things scientifically or medically. We just build evidence. Let me tell you a little thing about the way that we were taught, and just in terms of how do you design a scientific experiment to, you know, to prove something. Now, it turns out that, you know, not all studies are created equal, and it turns out some fields of study actually proceed faster with their they publish more papers, they get their data out there quicker than other fields. And part of it has to do actually with something that's called, way to think about it is this, okay? If you can disprove something, it's easier than proving something. Does that make sense to people? So, like, if you can find out that, if you do a negative study, for example, you think that would be a bad thing. I'm going to try something and it doesn't work, okay? Well, that's okay. And actually, in some cases, that can help. You know, you can say that doesn't work. So when you start eliminating things, a very good example of this has to do with studies of DNA. You know, we're learning all about DNA and DNA sequences, and we sequence the genome, and we do all this stuff. There's a lot of stuff of DNA. There's a lot of junk DNA that does nothing, okay? But when you boil down to it, you want to find out, well, you know, what is the part that matters? What part works? And they made a lot of progress in that, because you can pretty much rule out the things that don't work, the randomness of things. So rule out those random sequences. You can rule out things that by directly creating things that bind to certain regions. You can tell whether, you know, is this going to work or not? So they say, well, you know, you can create experiments that are very specific when they match up with a sequence. And that field, you know, has exploded. It makes lots and lots of progress very, very quickly. Okay, but now when you get down to, like, okay, well, all right, so we have something that we want to do. Like, I think they could found out pretty quickly, you know, right away, which parts of the coronavirus were the ones that to worry about. You know, functionally, they found these spike proteins that are on this coronavirus, and it seems that these spike proteins are always there, and that would be a good candidate, for example. It seemed to bind to the cells. Ones that have more spikes seem to be more infectious, so that all sounds like a good target for a potential vaccine. So, yeah, we right away knew what that sequence is and what those proteins were and identified them and all that. That kind of science goes very quickly these days. Okay, and one of the approaches, I mean, one of the kind of interesting just to think about reading different approaches to creating a vaccine is to, how do you, you know, different ways to make vaccines. And I'll just get briefly say that, you know, the old way was to gather up samples of the virus, grow them up in things like chicken eggs, and then inactivate them by heat or something. So you have like a killed virus, but it's all the proteins of the virus. You've grown up a large quantity, and then you make a vaccine for that. So that'd be like our typical vaccines of the past that are not molecular biology ones. So you grow up a large amount of the virus, you inactivate it, you inject it, and people get an immune response, and then when you see that live virus, you're ready for it, and you can fight it off. But But that kind of approach takes a long time to grow up enough of that protein to get a whole millions and millions of doses. So, you know, the new approaches are kind of interesting. So the one you've heard about, this Moderna company, it has a different approach. It basically says, okay, we figure out a way to create the sequence of something called mRNA. That's Mike Romeo November Alpha. It's a part of our way our bodies normally, and all creatures that use DNA and RNA that make proteins. It's the way our body makes proteins. The RNA is a template that tells, you know, the protein manufacturing machinery, hey, make these proteins out of amino acids, and it's a sequence. It's just like almost like a computer program. It reads the sequence and it spits out a chain of amino acids, and those things fold up in a certain way, and that creates a protein. So, now without going into great detail, and probably they haven't even given us the detail very much, but Moderna thinks they have a way of encapsulating mRNA that codes for parts of the COVID-19 virus for the proteins in it, and it goes in, it gets absorbed by our cells, and then our cells produce this little segment of protein that would normally be part of a coronavirus, but it's just a piece of the protein. So it's not, it's a, you know, an intact piece of protein. It's not cooked or inactivated or anything like that. It's just only a piece of protein, though. It's not a whole coronavirus, so you can't really get infected by it. But it does present a foreign type of protein that your body senses and says, wait a minute, this is not good, and starts making antibodies against it, in theory. So anyway, that's the basic overview of what they're trying to do. So we need to find out whether it's safe and whether they really do make antibodies, and then they need to figure out whether those antibodies that are made against it can most importantly protect you from getting infected. So it is a good, an interesting idea, and there are other ideas out there to create things. There's another one that takes another kind of virus, as sort of a virus that doesn't hurt you, and uses the virus to insert the DNA into your DNA and make your DNA trick it again to make copies of a protein that would be identified as foreign. So these new approaches are taking your own machinery and making it make the viral protein rather than trying to grew up large quantities of the protein. Okay, so anyway, that's just the overview of the science behind the viral stuff that you're hearing right now, the vaccine stuff, and again, we'll see what happens when they go to these big clinical trials. And people are, you know, signing up for these things, and we just have to wait and see. It's one of those things that takes time. It takes time to mount an immune response, and it takes time to see, you know, what happens with these antibodies. So, but it is happening faster than I think historically we've ever developed vaccines. Okay, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Pause here for any check-ins, comments, questions. Come down, please.
Good evening, this is Brett. This is Kilo Foxtrot 7, Golf November. Just checking in. I had to miss most of the net, so just wanted you to know I was out there. So thanks again for hosting, a great net. This is KF7, GGM, back to net.
Good evening, this is Whiskey 7, Mike Tango Lima, Craig, just checking in and listening for a while.
Okay, there's Craig, Whiskey 7, Mike Tango Lima, and Scott, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Golf November. Thank you both for checking in. Either of you have any comments or questions?
This is KF7 GGN Scott here. I don't know what your discussion was this evening, but was there any discussion on testing at all?
Okay, we didn't really talk about testing right now. We just, other than the results of the testing, I think we mentioned before on a previous one about pool testing. Do you guys understand what? Go ahead with your question. I'll see if I don't answer. If I can't answer it, I promise not to lie to you, but I will look it up or send it off to a Dr. Sun for verification. But what's your question about the testing?
I was going to go ahead and ask about specifically what the tests are actually looking for, but you can just explain pool testing. That's something new for me. I think we all did, all of us maybe get the benefit from that explanation. Thanks, Brett.
Okay, yeah, very good. So one of the things that they talked about recently has to do with if you've been paying attention to the news, and I don't know if people are still paying attention or not. There's a decreasing number of people who follow this stuff. But realize that we still have growing cases and huge, huge demand for tests all over the country. So much so that right now one of the things that's a problem is that there is a significant lag in when you are tested and when you get your results. And in general, I mean, obviously you're trying, whenever a doctor does a test, right, and I'm not speaking as a medical professional, but I'm speaking as a person that did medical research. You know, whenever you're doing a test, you are trying to confirm or rule out, I actually call it, this is in that idea of ruling out. You want to, the test is supposed to rule out your assumption, okay? Then that's a sort of backwards way of thinking that if you rule out things, you end up with the truth, right? So anyway, you're trying to rule out other, you suspect that the cause in this case would be coronavirus, so you would test for coronavirus. You do have to rule out other causes, so they might also test for, influenza if they thought that it was an influenza thing. But they're going to test everybody right now for coronavirus because it is the one that we're watching right now, and it is pretty much natural. If anybody comes into any clinical setting with any sort of symptom whatsoever, they're going to get a coronavirus test. And so there are two reasons for that. One would be if you have symptoms to, determine that, yes, you indeed have that problem, not something else, and that they would take measures to protect, isolate you and protect you from other people who are in the hospital who don't have the problem. And secondly is, again, they're also trying to figure out how many people have this thing. So there's the testing that's called surveillance testing, where we know that we have people who, let's say, are showing up from a given source of, let's say it's a factory or something like that, showing up with symptoms, and they test everybody because they want to know, hey, how widespread is this thing? Because that's called surveillance testing, right? You get a drip? So, there's this tremendous demand right now for the test, and the reagents that go with the test, the swabs, the reagents, the things like that, are all kind of in short supply. And you are hearing reports that people say, well, we're going through thousands of these a day in places like Texas and Arizona and things, and they're at capacity. They can't do any more tests, and so, what do you do when that's the case, okay? When we don't have, there's been several approaches. One, get new technology, okay, that works faster, okay? They're working on that. I can't tell you enough about it right now, but there have been some suggestions, which I'll just mention, okay? But let's talk about pool testing as a strategy. Okay, real quick, because we've got to wrap it up. But what pool testing does is it takes, I think the number I read was 50 people, and you take all of the 50 people's swabs. You still have to use the swabs, okay? But you combine them, I guess, into one test, okay, and then you test it. And at that test, again, it's real good for surveillance testing where you expect a very low number of people to be positive, okay? That's what it works best for. Quickly rule out. If that 50 test comes out negative, you're done. 50 people are done, okay, all in one go. That result is very, very quick, much, much quicker than doing 50 separate tests. But the flip side of that is if the number of people who are testing positive is high enough, the odds are that you know, how many out of 50, right? What are the odds of someone asymptomatic showing up in your sample? If that's the case, you have to retest all 50 people. Again, run them all separately. That may save enough reagent to, you know. So you actually end up having to do 51 tests if one comes up positive. So it's a bit of a roll of the dice as to whether it's going to help or not. But it is a way of quickly getting an answer doing one test. Okay, so that's what pool testing is. But you know, it does have the problem that if you find one positive, it doesn't really save you any time at all. You've actually done one more test than you need to do. So the other thing I'll just mention really quickly, and we'll find out about it a little more, is that there have been some companies that have said, oh, well, we have a new kind of test, and using saliva, and it'll work like a pregnancy test, and you'll kind of spit in a tube and dip the little thing in there, and it'll turn color if you have it. And that is the case, and they said, you know, that they have developed this thing. The question is, how good is it? You know, RAP, it apparently is not as sensitive, meaning it misses people, okay? We talked about that, yeah, you know, it may be that when you get tested matters. It seems like it does. If you keep testing people again and again, you know, you may not test positive, and then you might test positive, and then you might be negative after that, and it might be positive again later. It's kind of hit and miss. Usually, if you do test positive, that's real. Okay, you can believe that. But the negatives you can't believe on a test that's not sensitive. So what we have to worry about on the fast ones, so they said, well, but they're cheap. They're cheap and they're fast, and you get the result right now. Okay, so that's good, but that means you're going to miss people, and they would have to be used with caution because what you have to do is you have to repeatedly test with an inaccurate test like that. You have to give that kind of test all the time, you know. So, and the hope is that when you do repeated measures with the test that you maybe you didn't pick up the first time, but we'll test you again tomorrow, try it again, you know. So it could give you a false sense. The problem is if you get a negative test, you would have a false sense of security, thinking, oh, well, I tested negative, and that is probably not really a safe assumption unless you've been tested 10 times with it, this test. I don't know what the number is. You know, they'll have to tell us if they get it approved. Okay, any other comments on the testing? If you do find something about it, oh, well, you know, look at the, or send me the reference to where the study is and how it's going to work, and we can get some professional advice on evaluating the testing. But, yeah, it would be really nice if we could do universal testing, get quick results, but waiting 11 days for test results is not very helpful. Doesn't let you know, you're supposed to just then you have to just quarantine everybody since it hits, and we're back to that problem again.
This is Scott GTN.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Brad, I know you want to close then, so I was wondering if I could ask you a couple of questions after that.
Yeah, sure. That'll be fine. Yeah, let's go ahead. And is there any other final comments before I close it here? Because we can continue on here, but I don't want to keep people longer than they want to.
I just started listening.
Okay, I think I heard K7MJB. Again, your signal is not the greatest. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here, and I got the long antenna on.
Okay, well, that was a little better that time. All right, good. Well, I got you checked in. I'm just going to close the net right now. Thank you for joining us. Anyway, let me go in. The time is now 8:05 p.m. and this, or 8:06 actually, and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. I think we'll try to have a recording of this available. Richard has been recording for us. We'll try to get that available. We have been meeting every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Courtesy of Dan, WA7ABU, and his great repeater. We thank you to all who participated today and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. So, this is KG7GDB, closing the net now, 8:06 p.m., and we now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. And I will hang around for Scott or, casual conversation. KG7GDB, the net is over.